Game, the podcast where baseball fans discuss the baseball books they love. I'm your host, Steve Klein, and this episode, I'm delighted to be discussing Conflict, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the War for My Heart, which is going to be a very interesting book for British members of our audience and also for members of our audience who are in the States and elsewhere, because actually just the second book that we've discussed on the podcast, which was actually written by a Brit. So we're really excited to welcome that Brit to the show. Welcome, Ryan Ferguson. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks very much for joining us. And you'll also hear from Phil Stone. Hi, Phil. How's it going?
It's going all right. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. All right. Well, the first thing we'll do to kick off then is to ask Ryan, if it's okay, Ryan, to just to tell us a little bit about the book and why you decided to write it.
Yeah, so I think, you know, like you guys, I've always had a massive passion for baseball books. I think, you know, living in Britain, I think it's one of the, you know, the main outlets that we can use really to discover the sport, to peel back those layers of the history, the nuance of the game. So from an early age, I've always been sort of obsessed with baseball books. I sort of fell in love with the game, like a lot of British fans, using the Channel 5 show back in the day. And I sort of stumbled across the game, I think it's like 2004. And since then, yeah, it's been pretty much a roller coaster journey. So the book is, it's part memoir, part sort of history of baseball from a British perspective. And obviously the main selling point of the book is it chronicles how our fandom sort of changes as we mature, as we sort of experience different things in life, and you know the real conundrum that British fans have sometimes when trying to select a sports team to support in any of the North American sports, because the traditional sort of apparatus of sporting fandom, so geography or family tradition, you know, a lot of times those attributes aren't sort of afforded to us in the UK. So it's always, to a certain extent, we have to sort of manufacture our bonds with different clubs. So you know, the book sort of explores that in, you know, quite painstaking detail at times. And I think, you know, a lot of people could maybe relate to that struggle as well.
Definitely. I mean, that one of the things, having been a baseball fan, exiled in the UK for quite a long time, one of the nicest things about getting involved with the whole MLB community movement over here and getting to know people more on social media and going to meetups and stuff has been hearing people's baseball origin story, if you like, you know, how they came involved in baseball. And one of the most interesting things is always, why did you pick the team that you picked? So from that point of view, it's really, really interesting. Just like it is interesting to hear from any British fan about why it is they like baseball. But when did you come to actually want to write the book? Because I know you've been involved in baseball writing since you were quite young. So when did this kind of idea germinate into actually wanting to bring a book to publication?
Well, I've always been, writing has always been my main passion. So from the earliest age, you know, I was always sort of scribbling down notes, ideas, you know, as I discovered baseball. And like you say, I was fortunate enough to have a successful sort of freelance career covering the game for The Guardian, BBC Sport, and a few papers in America. And it was always, you know, I always had this sort of idea germinating, as you say, in the back of my mind, you know, and it was vaguely, you know, trying to bring it all, coalesce it all into some kind of structure. And I think over time, that just sort of naturally fell into place. So you know, the London series in 2019 was a real sort of motivator. You know, the experiences I think that we all had there, you know, it was just a dream come true. And you know, the amount of people that, you know, started expressing their baseball journey, as you say. It was brilliant. It was really inspirational. And last year I published my first book, which was about Tranmere Rovers, which is my British football club. A bit of a niche interest, I'm sure it's fair to say. So I really enjoyed the process of writing a book. Just the creative environment and the peace it can give you to get those ideas out there. It's quite a cathartic experience, and I just started typing away, and before I knew it, this manuscript had just grown sort of out of control. I just enjoy the process, and I always say if you know, people enjoy the finished product, for me, that's a happy coincidence. It's just brilliant to have that finished article to be proud of.
How much of the book?
Sorry, Phil.
How much of the? I've got so many questions that I want to pick up on. But how much of the book did you write, or was based on like diary entries that you were writing at the time, versus how much was done in retrospect?
I think I've been blogging about baseball since must have been 2008-09. There was quite an extensive archive there to use more as sort of research material and just to give me that structure, really. And I pretty much wrote the whole thing fresh. So there was no sort of extracts taken from diaries, but as you say, I've always sort of documented that sort of relationship with baseball. I think our British perspective it's very unique in that respect. So I had an extensive archive to look back on from hindsight almost, and then stitched it all together around the 2019 London series, as we mentioned.
And in what ways, you mentioned that you said you found it cathartic, and can you give us a couple of examples of how you feel you grew throughout the book?
Yeah, so the main gist of the book, I guess, is the way I started as a Red Sox fan, and through a bizarre sequence of events, essentially I ended up rooting for the Yankees, which is just like the biggest taboo you can possibly think of in baseball. And when people take that headline, they easily just dismiss whatever you've got to say, and that's rightfully so. And I think for a lot of years I lived in sort of secrecy, really, with that fandom, because when I was working in the game and as a journalist, you're supposed to be objective. You're supposed to, report. There's no cheering in the press box. So it was sort of a double-edged sword, really, in terms of if I sort of came out and, sort of wrote an expose on this sort of taboo secret that I held, my credibility within, the profession would have been diminished instantly. So as you say, I think it's a maturation process, really, from start to finish, where I finally feel comfortable to go into detail on things I've never really spoken about before.
And it was obviously really important for you to identify with a team rather than, like you say, become a journalist who maybe keeps their fandom behind closed doors. So what do you think it was about the idea of attaching to a team, specifically the Yankees, that became such a passion of yours, rather than just kind of become a fan of baseball more generally, would you say?
Yeah, well, I think, with the Yankees, the whole interest in the Yankees came about because I was researching for an article. In 2013, I think the Yankees announced a collaboration with Manchester City, obviously the Premier League club here in England. And from a British perspective, I was keen to explore what that could possibly mean for British baseball and growing the game here in terms of possibly, you know, bringing games to Manchester, London, wherever it may be. So I was just researching really around that topic, and I reached out to the Yankees, to the press office, just expecting not much in return, if I'm honest. Maybe just a stock quote about, you know, their international sort of outlook or what they aim to get out of the collaboration. And it actually, I got a reply from it was a lady called Christina Campana, who worked in the guest relations department for the Yankees. And she passed on, you know, my queries to the various departments, but she also said that, you know, my interest in the team had caused quite a stir amongst the office, really, within the Yankees. And they wanted to basically, you know, reach out and send me a gift, which was, you know, as a journalist, you know, in hindsight, it should have raised a red flag instantly. But there was just something so appealing in quite a perverse way, I guess. Like we say, we spend so long trying to manufacture connections to these far off teams that are 3,000 miles away. And when one of those teams actually comes forward and proactively tries to make that connection, it was just very sort of, you know, it was very intoxicating, really. And I recognize that, you know, the Yankees probably spend millions of pounds a year, millions of dollars a year trying to, you know, capture the attention of these fans for life. But, you know, it worked. It worked, yeah, in this instance. And that, you know, that connection is, you know, it's just grown bigger and bigger, obviously, with the London series victory, you know, some of the experiences, you know, we had around, you know, that whole event, and, you know, that natural fandom. I think the book is just it's a quest for natural fandom more than anything. And it took a long time to get to that point, but, you know, I'm really happy with the outcome.
One of the things I'm really interested in, because you talk about that kind of natural fandom or the kind of organic fandom, but you've kind of arrived there via the Red Sox. And then I don't think I'm giving too much away if I tell the sort of the timeline. So we go Red Sox, then Dodgers very briefly, then Cubs, both Dodgers and Cubs very briefly, and then Yankees, then back to Red Sox very briefly, and back to Yankees. Is that right?
Well, yes, more or less. I wouldn't really count the last Red Sox one to a great extent, but I think it's the Dodgers and Cubs is very sort of, like you say, it was probably a year period where I classed it as sort of like the wilderness, really. I was just like, I'd been a Red Sox fan for like 6 or 7 years, I think. It was all I'd known. And, you know, the gist of the book essentially is how when in 2010, the Red Sox owners, so John Henry, Tom Werner, they purchased Liverpool FC, which is a major rival of Tranmere Rovers, which is my, you know, my foremost identity, my, you know, the one tradition and allegiance that was passed down to me in terms of sports. So there was an inherent sort of inherent tribalism of British football. Sort of that was just like overpowering. And in my head, you know, I was very immature at the time. You know, I think I was 16, and it's probably a 16-year-old's decision in hindsight. So I just couldn't, you know, in my head, I couldn't process or reconcile how if I basically bought a Red Sox hoodie or a cap or, you know, a magazine subscription, whatever it may be, you know, that money would basically trickle through the system into Liverpool and, you know, making great this team that I, you know, disliked, essentially. And there's a strong correlation between the growth of Liverpool FC and the demise of Tranmere Rovers, which, you know, exists basically you know, 5 miles away from Liverpool in the shadows. And yeah, I just basically, you know, terminated my interest in the Red Sox on those grounds. And then, you know, for a few years, just basically, well, a year, stumbled around, just falling, watching various teams, like you say, the Dodgers, Cubs, you know, but it was never really, you know, anything deep-seated passion for those teams, really. And obviously then, as I mentioned, the, you know, the journalism career kicks in, and you know, the whole Yankees you know, experience sort of unfolds from there, really.
Because I was gonna, like, I was kind of arriving at a question, but do you think now, are you, because you assert quite confidently in the book that you're now a Yankees fan for life, and there's this really touching, I think, I'm a bit of a softie, but there's a really touching part towards the end where you talk about how you can envisage, you know, going to Yankee Stadium with offspring and stuff, and then having that kind of bond, and being able to pass down your fandom and your love for the organization to your children, which I thought was quite sweet, especially in the context of your relationship, which you talk about. So congratulations on that. But how confident are you that this is it now? That there's never going to be another team for you? Like, are there any hypothetical situations, any hypothetical circumstances that would lead you, do you think, or do you envisage that you might change to another organization, even back to the Red Sox, God forbid?
No, I don't think back. I don't think back to the Red Sox. Certainly not. I think, obviously, if Hal Steinbrenner happens to buy Liverpool at some point, then that would probably be a sticking point. But aside from that, no.
What about if FSC bought Tranmere?
If John Henry and Tom Werner bought Tranmere, well, that's the ultimate conundrum, isn't it?
or if Tranmere grew to be such a dominant force in global football that they had enough wealth associated with them to be able to purchase the Red Sox.
I don't think that is ever likely to happen.
I did say it's hypothetical.
Yeah. No.
You see what I'm getting at? I'm just trying to see how sure are you? Because it's because from a personal level, I've always been a Giants fan. But there's other teams that I really like as well, and I think that's what you allude to a little bit with the Cubs and the Dodgers, that you didn't really feel like you were fans of those teams, but that you valued some of their, you liked their players, there was something about the organization that you liked. Like, I've got that with a number of teams, but I would never say I was a fan of those teams. I would say, I'd always say I root for the Giants, but I like other teams as well, and I want other teams to do well, and I'm perfectly happy in the postseason to pick another team to follow, you know, and root for in the postseason. Because I wouldn't say I was a partisan Giants fan, you know. And I'm just kind of, trying to see if there's any kind of a circumstance you could envisage, kind of, even if you're not fully fledged support, but whether you could sort of go back to having another team who you like, that you rooted for, or whatever. Or it's difficult now because the Yankees are in a really exciting time in their development with their young players and stuff, but. You know, in a few years' time, perhaps things aren't doing so well. Would you maybe look elsewhere? Or,
well, I think you know, this has been sort of 6-7 years now where I've been sort of following the Yankees, and you know, the first couple of years were pretty terrible in terms of, you know, the Yankees didn't get to the playoffs, which is, you know, in the Yankees universe, is just, you know, sacrilege, really. And I think, like you say, I've experienced such great experiences in London, you know, some real personal sort of experiences. So, you know, getting my first signed ball by Mark Teixeira, you know, having an exchange with, you know, Aaron Judge by the dugout on the workout day, you know, those are the things that, you know, are always going to be real hooks for you. You know, the tangible things that you can hold on to, much like we do with football, you know, more naturally here, I guess. So, like you say, there's all, you know, as a baseball fan, first and foremost, there's always going to be interesting subplots, you know, great players, great teams to enjoy watching. But like you say, if there ever is that temptation, I think that now there's those hooks and those tangible sort of experiences to probably stop that from happening.
Sorry, Steve, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say, just to pick up on your point about the London series, like as a Red Sox fan, I hate to admit it, but the Yankees, like, they knocked it out of the park. They, in terms of their fan engagement, it was so much better than what the Red Sox were doing. It was quite embarrassing. Like, obviously, I'm a member of a couple of like UK fan groups, and they really struggled to get any engagement at all. And you do write about that in the book. And I think if I was a floating voter, I definitely would have gravitated towards the Yankees based on their engagement and their performance off the field during the London series, for sure.
Well, there was a, like you say, I mentioned it in the book, there was a great sort of initiative that the Yankees did with the London Mets, who are one of the most successful British baseball clubs. So essentially the Yankees put on like a training workshop day with the London Mets at Finsbury Park, I think it was, where, you know, the Yankees had, you know, a legend teaching, you know, the youth players at various different skills, whether it be, you know, hitting, pitching, fielding. You know, there was Alex Rodriguez was there, Carlos Beltran, Mariano Rivera, Andy Pettit, you know, Reggie Jackson. And I think the Yankees donated like a $30,000 worth of equipment. And like you say, I think they were more intent on making a lasting legacy, you know, in terms of growing the British game. And I think, it's difficult for any team to, you know, for us, it's the series of a lifetime. For those two organizations, it's just another series in June. You know, I guess it's difficult to, you know, approach it in a different manner, certainly. But like you say, I think the Yankees really, you know, mastered the PR, you know, from start to finish in London.
Yeah, and I mean, it's we can be cynical. I think people, I remember talking to people about it at the time. It's exactly a year ago, isn't it, that they were here. We're recording on the 29th of June, so it was the Sunday game last year. But I can remember talking about it, people, and initially being quite cynical and sort of saying, you know, it's a PR thing. But actually, you have to think on a human level how much of an impact it's going to have on those young children that are involved and that organ and that club. You know, if it was a PR motivated move, then it's gone further than that anyway. It's transcended that, in my opinion. I think it was a really nice thing for them to do. I'm just interested, like, if you hadn't, you mentioned about the catharsis and also about how you kept it quite closeted for quite a long time. And have you had any pushback since the publication of the book, or since making people aware of it again?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think in the book, I say that our sport and allegiances are pretty much one of the most sacred aspects of our lives. So, you know, we get married, divorced, we change jobs, we move house, you know, we change religions, but we, you know, our sport and allegiances are sort of non-refundable, and it's very sort of taboo if you change allegiance, certainly to such, you know, disparate extremes as what I have. And, you know, I readily admit in the book that, you know, that there is inconsistencies, there is sort of logical redundancies in, you know, my sort of story, and I don't shy away from those. And I expected a backlash, and that's why I say, you know, I wrote the book for myself, really, rather than for other people. And actually reaching a point where I feel comfortable to, you know, just let it all flow, really. You know, it was a big moment for my sort of personal development. And, you know, I'm proud to get it out there. You know, there's always going to be sort of a backlash, you know, in terms of how hostile the rivalry can be. But if people, all I've asked is that people, you know, try and read the book from cover to cover before they sort of, you know, reserve judgment until you've actually read from cover to cover, because I think I went through about six or seven different drafts and proof copies, just trying to play devil's advocate, really, and trying to be, you know, deeply critical of my own sort of, you know, decisions I've made, and trying to see from the other perspective where, you know, I could be ridiculed, or where, you know, I have made decisions that don't especially, you know, ring true with other parts of the narrative that I'm discussing. But I think in that regard, the book also touches on, you know, it doesn't shy away from some big topics. So the Red Sox history of sort of racism, and, you know, with Tom Yorkie, and, you know, the lack of integration in the major leagues, and, you know, the Yankees' poor record on domestic violence, or, you know, sexual assault, that kind of thing. And, you know, the book doesn't pull any punches in that regard. And, you know, I think there are times where, you know, I do manage to sort of take a step back and not be sort of too partisan in criticizing both teams. And again, I think that that's part of the wider sort of discourse in terms of the difficulty of, you know, supporting sports teams that fundamentally are, you know, the corporate businesses, really. And, you know, to a large extent, we all just support, you know, various, you know, shades of the same entity in that regard, especially in, you know, with the franchise model in North American sports. So, you know, the book tackles some big issues, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, won't agree to the conclusions that I come to, but, you know, that's part and parcel of publishing any work, I guess.
And that's one of the, again, another really interesting thing that you discuss in the book, is that kind of cognitive dissonance that we have as fans when we're kind of picking and choosing what it is that we're going to accept from our allegiances, you know, from our sporting franchises, things that we'll accept and things we won't accept, because we all have to kind of make decisions for ourselves, don't we, about what we're going to do. I really liked the thing. There's a thing you mentioned, which I wasn't aware of, which was, I think it was with Chapman. And you said that somebody said they were going to, you're going to donate for every strikeout or something, or for every save. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, it was an idea that I came across during the research process. So, obviously the bit of background, obviously the Yankees, traded for Aroldis Chapman whilst the domestic violence investigation was still ongoing. And that left a bitter taste in a lot of people's mouth in terms of how Brian Cashman and sort of the Yankee management, you know, managed to seize on a, you know, a suppressed asset, really, and the way they put sort of wins before, you know, morals, ethics. You know, and I think that's one of the big things that I struggled with, you know, as a Yankees fan. It's in terms of, you know, rooting for the team, but then they've got this guy who's accused of some pretty sort of heinous things. And during that process, I'd done a lot of reading and a lot of, you know, I asked a lot of questions in the Yankees community, just how people were reconciling those two, you know, very sort of emotionally jarring concepts, really. And I think it was the editor of Pinstripe Alley, which is like a Yankees website. I think Tanya Boudrons, I might get the pronunciation wrong, but she essentially decided to donate, I think it was $1 for every strikeout that Chapman recorded as a Yankee. And basically in the book, I basically pledged to do the same for the rest of his Yankees career, and the same with Domingo Germán as well, who was another Yankees player embroiled in domestic violence allegations. And I think, like you say, it's a way of reconciling in our own mind how you know, we can root for the team whilst disapproving of, you know, the people it employs day to day.
Cool. I mean, another thing that I really liked, you talked about the catharsis of kind of getting the story out there, but there was this sense, I got this sense that there was a catharsis in you kind of revisiting the work that you did as a very, you know, as a child, you know, you talked about this book that you slaved over as a teenager and that you were desperate to get out there, and you got some quite positive feedback, but ultimately, you know, you were shooting for the sky if you thought you were going to get a book published as a 12 or 13 year old, right? Is that right?
Yeah, that was right. Yeah.
And then there's this really nice sense that you've revisited it, and that it's an opportunity for you to actually go back and read over that and include some of that stuff and those thoughts in the book. And you mentioned how avid a reader you were and of baseball books at the time. And there's some really interesting stories about how you obtained your books as well, which I thought were really sweet. I mean, it's so interesting finding out so much about you. You're very open, very honest. And I think that works really, really well in the book. As you said, it's partly memoir, and I think that's a really nice side of it. But which writers most inspired you as a child? And do you still find them to be inspirational now as you're writing your own books now as an adult?
Yeah, so definitely. You know, you touched on the manuscript that I... So essentially in 2008, I attempted to write a diary of the entire Red Sox season. Like you say, I think it was 13 at that point. And I was inspired by... it was a book called Faithful by Stephen King and Stuart Onan. So basically they basically collaborated on a diary for the 2004 Red Sox season. So Stephen King, obviously, you know, one of the most famous writers, you know, of all time. But he's also a huge baseball fan and, you know, a big Red Sox fan to boot. And, you know, I just loved that book. It was one of the first books that I sort of couldn't put down. And I wanted to sort of imitate it, really. And that's what led to me, so as you know, jotting down Red Sox notes every day, and in the end this manuscript just, yeah, it went out of control, and it was littered with errors, with grammatical mistakes, but I've still got it on an old hard drive, and it was brilliant in terms of just the process of writing every day and finding my voice as a writer even at such a young age. You know, it was a really rewarding experience. And like you say, I was managed to drop in a few different sections of that book, which is a nice touch, I think. And it's, you know, a nod to, I guess it's a nod to the Red Sox of old in that respect, which I still have, you know, a lot of respect for. And, you know, I'm glad that I could include that.
I'm glad you said that, because there is a sense of reverence still in... And of the Red Sox as an organization. One of the things we're going to have to wrap up because of time. But would you be able to give positives about the Red Sox as an organization, or is it something that you've closed yourself off to now? And likewise, would you be able to give yourself some negatives about the Red Sox, about the Yankees? You've already mentioned the way they've dealt with some of the domestic abuse stuff, but.
No, definitely. I think to directly answer the question about, you know, writers that inspired me.
Oh, sorry.
I think that the Boston tradition of literary tradition is just brilliant. You know, the Red Sox they lend themselves to, you know, literature, to great writing, to, you know, that romantic sort of imagery better than any organization, I think. And a lot of the old Boston Globe journalists are huge inspirations, and they remain, you know, huge role models to me in terms of writing. So guys like Dan Shaughnessy, Peter Gammons, Lee Montville, I think they are, you know, the best at what they do. So in that respect, you know, the Red Sox hold a special place in baseball literature. Certainly, and that's something that I can, you know, still respect and still admire to this day.
Okay, cool. Well, I think we'll have to wrap up. I'd love to ask you more stuff, but and then I'm going to rush you to answer them in 2 minutes. So I don't think it's very fair. But I've really enjoyed talking to you about the book. It's been really interesting because it's a controversial book. You know, it caused me to think a lot about my own feelings towards. Giants and think of the Giants and then think about baseball in general, and even actually it transcended that, you know, it made me start thinking about my allegiances to football and to
yeah, it's the same. Like the nature of fandom itself, it really makes you think. And why do I support Chesterfield when they're so rubbish versus Boston Red Sox, who are, you know, a powerful big organization backed with a lot of money? Like marrying those two things together it definitely makes you think.
So it's really nice to have you on to talk about the book, because it gives us that extra kind of, gives us a little bit extra as well, and to hear your thoughts on top of what we've read. So I'm really glad to have had the opportunity to talk to you about it. It really supplements my enjoyment of the book really well. So thanks very much.
I appreciate the opportunity, guys. Yeah.
No problems. Do you want to very quickly, because we're down to our last sort of minute, but very quickly let everybody know either where they can catch you on social media or where the best place to get hold of the book is and that kind of stuff? Because I think you're writing, so you self-published, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So best place to get the book in the first instance would be Amazon. So it's available in paperback and ebook. So just search for Conflict or Ryan Ferguson on Amazon. Obviously you can access it through my website as well, which may be easier. That's ryanferguson.co.uk. And then Twitter is my main sort of social media, which is at RyanFergusonHQ.
All right. Fantastic. Well, thanks very much for coming on to talk about the book. And thanks very much, Phil, for coming on as well. Get a goodbye from everybody.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Goodbye.
Thanks, guys.